Before I moved to Virginia, as many of you know, I lived in an intentional community in upstate New York. We had our own local area network and community listserv. The geek team of the community was in charge of keeping all the technology we used running smoothly. When there were glitches in the system, a series of emails would pop up on our listserv. I cannot connect. And then a whole string of emails that said, me neither, me neither, me neither. Until someone on the geek team would notice, chime in, and reassure people that they knew the problem existed and when it would be resolved. It was in a string of one of these email exchanges this summer that my friend Kurt chimed in, and this is what he wrote, and I have his permission to share this with you. And I quote Kurt, I've lost some of my connection too. Could be I'm becoming a bit more of an introvert these days. Or maybe it's just because my work schedule is a bit irregular. I think not being able to go to common meals because of my schedule contributes as well. I'm sure we'll all feel more disconnected with Richard and Petra leaving too. I remember them tagging along on a master composter trip I organized in a farm out in Rochester. Anything they could do to support us and connect us with others of like mind. They are among the first to welcome me to Frog, eager to connect with me and learn who I was. Richard was very attached to two things that I too love, cleaning and composting. We'll miss them, but we will always feel connected to them. Much like I felt connected with my wife and our neighbors this last weekend, walking through the song woods with their dog, listening to the thrushes whistle their songs at twilight. Or like the connection we had tonight, sitting with neighbors and their family over dessert in one of our common houses, just because. Yes, it would be nice if the geek team could work some wizardry and upgrade our connectivity. I, for one, appreciate all the work the geek team does to keep us connected. But I hope they feel free to take their time with the planned network upgrades. It gives me time to reflect on and appreciate other connections that phase in and out of my life. And that's Kurt, House 126. Richard and Petra, who Kurt mentions in the email, were also good friends of my husband Carl and me. Richard was the one who gave us our first tour when we visited the community. He and Petra invited us out to breakfast several times, introducing us to some of the best local breakfast spots. Petra and I shared a love of feminist theology, and we would share books with each other. She, too, had gone to divinity school, but had chosen not to be ordained. Richard and Petra were pushing 90, and their health was starting to deteriorate. They needed to move to a place where they could have more ongoing medical support. They were part of a network of people who very deliberately forged connection within our community. And I also noticed, when I moved to Virginia, how being connected electronically changes my connection to place. When we moved to Southern California 25 years ago, there was no internet. Southern California was very spread out. If I needed to learn to find my way around, I was told I needed to get a Thomas guide. Some of you might know what these are. A Thomas guide, for those of you who don't know, and are not familiar with this particular technology, it was a fat, spiral-bound book of interconnecting local maps. So I got the Thomas Guide and studied the different places I wanted to visit. My son Nicholas was a toddler, so I planned my explorations around his nap times, and as he fell asleep in the back seat, I would explore my new world. I drove around until I had a mental and visual map of most of the places I needed or wanted to go, and in driving them, I observed what was around them. So I found other places of interest that I could make note of and explore at other times. Moving to Ithaca was an entirely different experience because there was only town and the surrounding farmland. On a daily basis, I rarely went further than 5 miles from my home. That mental map was easy. But moving to Northern Virginia again, I was confronted by another sprawling, busy place, much like Southern California. But now I had GPS. I don't have as much time to explore as I did after my move to Southern California. But I'm noticing how having GPS makes it much harder for me to create mental and visual maps. Because instead of watching my world, I'm watching and listening to a small screen that is giving me directions. We have all these amazing ways to be connected to people and to navigate our world. Sometimes it is mind-boggling. I remember 15 or so years ago when I was the assistant DRE in the UU Church in Ithaca, having conversations about how best to communicate with our congregants. We said we needed 3 ways to communicate, and so the first was to hear about the event in the form of an announcement at church. And then we mailed postcards, to people's homes so they would have something tangible to put on their refrigerators. And we put flyers up around the church. When I was having this same conversation last year in the congregation in which I was the ministerial intern, someone said, "Now there are 10 ways we need to be communicating with people." I don't remember what they all were, but they involved multiple social media platforms and still turn out to some events with small. I am not anti-technology. I benefit greatly from the many ways that it has shaped the ways in which we communicate, the ways it can help us save time and energy for other things. And I am also aware how the illusion of connection, fostered by new technologies, can also disconnect and divide. We can live in these silos of information algorithmically programmed to send only things we want to know or see or interact with until it is possible never to hear another side of an issue or story, or to even understand that some of the information we receive is deliberately spun to keep us confused, or that the very scope of the information we receive so quickly and constantly is impossible for us to process. We are not meant to think so quickly. Jamil Zaki, author of the book The War for Kindness, Building Empathy in a Fractured World, talks about the way we can practice empathy in light of these fast-paced internet connections. He said, while there may be plenty of reasons why we should be angry and outraged, he notes, if you feel increasingly ready to engage people in what effectively become digital shouting matches and find it harder to stay silent or reflect before commenting, chances are the way you are using the internet is affecting your ability to empathize. We are embodied creatures who have evolved to interact with other embodied creatures. Writes Sherry Turkle, researcher on the subjective experience of technology and author of Reclaiming Conversation. She writes, face-to-face conversation is the most human and humanizing thing we can do. Fully present to one another, we learn to listen. It's where we develop the capacity for empathy. It's where we experience the joy of being heard, of being understood, Face-to-face conversation unfolds slowly. It teaches patience. We attend to nuance and tone. She introduces her readers to middle schoolers whose interactions are so mediated by words on a screen they have never learned to read social cues from conversation. And people whose workplace interactions are so mediated by email, they are terrified of unstructured conversation. So why am I bringing this up in the context of church community? Because I want to thank you for being here. You could attend the UU Church on Second Life. I know, I checked. Communal worship gives us the opportunity to disconnect to connect, although I'm fully aware that some of you are still checking your phones. It is one of the places where our experience of each other can truly be mediated through face-to-face interaction, where we can respond in real time to what we've heard, grapple with our discomfort, and check in with each other about how we are doing. We can learn to temper our outrage and engage in civil discourse, because in creating community, we also create a space where disagreement is possible, where mediated discussion helps us grow. We should not always agree with each other. However hard and challenging conflict may be, engaging in it helps us dig deep, explore our values, challenge our assumptions, and learn about each other in more than superficial ways. We can practice and improve our listening skills. We can practice our ability to reach out to each other. Jackie says that though our ability to empathize is part of our biological makeup, our experiences can either erode them or enable it to flourish. When we come together in love, we can learn to nurture it. My friend Joe Von Rue, a minister in Syracuse, refuses to publish sermon blurbs. She will give titles, but she will not expand on them before the sermon is given. When people have come to her demanding an explanation or complaining that they don't know what, if they don't know what the sermon is about, how can they make the decision to come or not? And she responds, "You are not here for my sermons. You are here to create and cultivate community." Of course, she hopes that her sermons are worthwhile and life-giving, but she wants to remind people that her sermons are not the only reason they show up week after week. In the past two interim years, I believe that you have learned that. You were here even as much of the work was not done by a minister. You learned who you were as a community. You learned that you could do extraordinary things because your commitment was not just to a minister giving really good sermons. You remained and you worked hard because this place, this community, was important to you. Showing up was important to you. Learning, loving, growing was important to you. I am going to slowly learn to navigate this new place. I will make mental and visual maps. I will eventually learn the big picture and see how everything fits together. I will learn which roads lead nowhere and which roads lead to further and more fruitful adventures. I will learn the places I need to go and then further the places I want to go. I will take you with me on this journey of discovery, because for this particular journey, I don't think I will need GPS. But I will need a navigator, or two, or three, or 100, who know a little more about the map than I do. And we will inevitably get lost. And because many of you know some landmarks better than I, we will find our way again. And then together we may go off the map, find new places that are yet to be explored because we did not know those roads existed yet. And because we have explored all these things together, when someone emails or tells us, I cannot connect, we can say, sit with me. We can work on that together. Amen. And blessed be.